This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio, and just a word of caution for those with younger listeners, this segment may include some graphic language. In 1997, Ramiro Hernandez Yanes, a Mexican immigrant, was working as a hired hand on a ranch in Texas. He lured his 48-year-old employer, Glenn Litch, outside of his home, and then he brutally beat him to death with a crowbar. Hernandez Yanes then went to a home, into that home, and repeatedly sexually assaulted Litch's wife. He was arrested and, while awaiting trial, attempted to escape, assaulting a jailer. In 2000, a jury convicted him on capital charges for the murder of Glenn Litch and sentenced him to death. 14 years later, he has exhausted all of his appeals and he awaits execution. The victim's son, Stephen Litch Tyler, plans to watch that execution. Stephen is a professor of economics at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, and he joins us on the program right now. Stephen, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you for letting me tell my story.
I appreciate your willingness to do this because I know this is difficult for you. Let's go back to that time when the district attorney had to make the decision about whether to seek the death penalty in the case. Did he come to you and your family?
He did come to us as a family, and you've told some of the story right here already. He asked for our input as a family, although I think to some extent he had already made up his mind. Here was his opportunity. He had a clear, brutal murder that had taken place, and here was his opportunity to get a capital conviction, to get a notch in his belt. But he did ask for our input, and as you said, Mr. Hernandez Yanes had been in jail awaiting trial. He had threatened that he was going to escape from jail and kill my mother, kill my grandmother. And then in an attempt to escape, he did in fact kill a jailer. And this is all happening 20 miles away from where my mother lived. So when the DA came to us after that and asked me whether I supported his seeking the death penalty, and it was very clear that there was a real threat here, at least from my perception. And you know, at the time, with Hernandez Yanes threatening to escape so close to our home, I mean, to be honest, I was sleeping with a shotgun under the bed, and I would have protected us. I would have done it myself if he had approached the house. And so I had no question about how to answer this to the DA that I supported seeking the death penalty in this case. I supported executing him.
And what we haven't said yet is that he had been convicted of a murder in Mexico and escaped.
He had previously been convicted of a murder. He escaped from prison. Then he came to the U.S. A few weeks before this happened, then he had raped another woman. He had stabbed a man in a fight and then came to my father's house looking for a place to stay and offered to do some odd jobs in exchange.
Can I take you back to that time when your father was murdered and you tell us what you saw and how old you were and where were you when it happened?
So this is right before my 21st birthday. I was in college at the time. I was in my apartment off campus. About 3 in the morning, the telephone rings. I get a call. It's Sheriff Francis Kaiser from Kerr County in Texas. And she says she wants to put my mother on the phone with me. And then I hear my mother, and she's just crying. She's hysterical. And she says, "Daddy's been killed. We think he's dead." And It just confused me. I was trying to imagine what kind of accident they had been in that had killed my father, that she had survived. That's my first thought, and you know, just didn't understand what she meant by "he's been killed. We think he's dead." Then the sheriff took the phone away from her, explained to me what had happened. The body had been found. They assumed it was my father. They're certain it was my father, but it was still pending formal identification. At that point, I went home. I was home that morning. It was after It was after a cleaning crew had come through and cleaned up the crime scene. Although I feel like this is one of those things that people don't understand, is that when there is a crime, when there is a brutal crime, it doesn't clean itself up. And so I'm still there at the house, and there are blood splatters. I spent the afternoon of my 21st birthday scrubbing up gray gunk and blood and fragments of bone from between the floorboards. And that's where I was at that point. My mother had been in the hospital. She was released.
You were, and then as you say, you were approached later on by the district attorney. Did you go to the trial?
I did not go to the trial. I did not want to be there. I did not want to hear the details repeated in public, and I especially did not want to hear my mother talking. My mother and I have never talked about this, at least until about two or three weeks ago. We have never said a single word about what happened. It's the elephant in the room, but I did not want to hear her talk about this.
Let me ask you how that's possible. Well, I mean, when you were together, did you sort of have the impulse to say something, or did it never cross your mind? I'm trying to imagine how you could talk.
How we could talk?
Yeah, how you could talk about anything and not about that. Wow.
Oh. There are so many other topics that we could be talking about, and just we would talk around this. I mean, it's so hard to talk about your feelings. And I mean, for me, this is part of the isolation of having been through this, is that there are so few people that I can relate to and who would identify with what I saw, the feelings I've had. And the two other people who've been through an experience like this are my mother and my sister. I just feel I can't talk with them because of how sensitive it is. And I don't want to dump more of a burden on them. I mean, my mother had been through something so brutal, and I didn't want to bring it back and ask her, "Hey, Mom, what happened? Tell me the details." I didn't want to bring it back. Hey, Mom, I'm feeling upset. I'm going through such and such. Well, she was going through plenty on her own. I just don't see how I could bring this up.
You didn't go to the trial. There was a conviction, and eventually the death penalty was imposed. How did you feel when you heard that?
It was good. This is what I wanted. It would bring an end to this. I mean, it's hard to explain how threatening this situation felt and continues to feel. There was relief knowing that this person would no longer be a risk, would no longer be threatening us. And even as much as we can try to keep him in prison, away from people, the threat is there. There is someone out there who is threatening our lives and who just, I don't know how else to describe it.
Would there have been a number of appeals since then? The conviction was in 2000. What were you feeling throughout all of this as you're hearing that the execution hasn't happened yet?
So the appeals have been very much an emotional roller coaster. You know, there would be a new story brought up, a new claim made, and it's been very hard to listen to some of these claims that his attorneys have made. Of course, they've made a claim that he is intellectually disabled, an Atkins claim. And to be honest, to be completely honest, if I were to be objective, this is complete nonsense. Everything about his behavior indicates that he was fully aware, capable of planning, of taking care of himself, of knowing exactly what he was doing, and yet his attorneys make this claim that he's intellectually disabled. They find two psychiatrists who will testify to this, and they make this claim that goes through the courts, gets repeated by the media, and I just see it every time in the headlines. Texas is set to execute a man whose attorneys claim that he is mentally retarded. And it just burns every time I hear that. His attorneys claim it, and yet it's not true. And we have to realize it's their job to claim every single thing that they can claim. But that doesn't make these things true. And so we've been through this with the mental retardation claims, through claims that he did not receive proper consular advice as a foreign national, through claim after claim, and it just gets tiring. And thinking that maybe on one of these issues, a court is going to decide, oh, hey, yeah, that was a wrongful conviction. We're going to overturn that. Let's let him out. We'll give him a new trial. And just, you know, what would you do? I mean, what would you do if this person were released walking around again? And so it's just been hard to hear, you know, here's a new claim. It's going through the courts. Okay, that's resolved. Things are quiet for a while, and then a new claim comes through.
You've decided to watch the execution. Why?
That's a really good question. I don't know. When I heard the news, I felt I wanted to be there. I felt that I wanted to watch, and I've asked myself frequently why. I know that as soon as I heard the news that he had exhausted all appeals, that his execution date was set, there was this relief, just knowing it was going to be over, knowing that this whole situation would be wrapped up, never continue. And so there's some relief from that. But then as to watching it, it's hard for me to... I mean, I keep asking myself this question. One of the things that I can say is just seeing that visual proof, visual confirmation seems to be what I need. And if I can make an analogy, I hope this is not inappropriate, but when the U.S. killed Osama bin Laden, I think the public was very frustrated that we never had that proof. We never had those photographs to show for certain that he was dead, to provide that confirmation. And we've always missed that sense of, I hate the word, but that sense of closure, certainty with Osama bin Laden's death. And that would be the closest comparison I think I can draw.
Have you been able to sort out for yourself? I can imagine how difficult this might be, but I wonder if you've tried, and I wonder if you were able to distinguish between the need to feel safe from a man who has demonstrated his ability to get out of prison, demonstrated his ability and willingness to go to any length, including to kill, to get out of prison. And so this man poses a threat to you personally. Separating that from what anyone would allow you, a sense of revenge against the man who did this to your family.
So I try to answer that question myself. And I go through a lot of thought experiments to try to understand how I feel. I mean, I ask myself, if I found out that he had just died in his jail cell, the end, would I get the same sense of relief? And I think the answer is yes. Okay, so there I understand that, you know, part of this is relief. Would it be preferable if I could confirm that? Yes, it would be. But then when it comes to questions of revenge or punishment, what I ask myself is, if I were given the option to request that this person be tortured to death, or that this person have his head bashed in like my father's, would I support that? And the answer is no. The answer is absolutely no. That would not make me feel better. That would not be satisfactory. That would just make the situation more horrible than it is. So when I ask myself those kinds of questions, I feel that it is the relief. It's finalizing things. And it's not a sense of punishment or revenge.
How did you feel about the death penalty before this? You were a young man. Did you have an idea about the death penalty?
So what I say is that as an educated, young, liberal, progressive person, I just accepted that I was opposed to the death penalty as just part of the party platform as a progressive liberal.
That's how you felt then. Do you have any sense about the death penalty in general, kind of as a public policy? This certainly is a unique case, not simply the brutality of the case, but the threat of an individual who's gotten out before and done it again. Is that the qualifier in this case, or have you rethought the death penalty in general as a public policy?
I try not to weigh in on the general question of whether the death penalty, whether I support the death penalty, whether I'm opposed to it. I mean, I suppose I'm opposed to all people dying in any way. But I certainly think about this one specific case. And when I think about what happened, what continues to happen, I understand why it would be used in this case. And I feel it's appropriate in this case. And so if you were to ask me how I feel about the death penalty, I would say there's no blanket statement. Let's think about it, you know, case by case. What are the circumstances? And so I suppose that does mean having it as an option, something for consideration that can be used under the right circumstances.
Have you allowed yourself to imagine what it's going to be like to watch the execution? And if so, what do you see, and how do you anticipate your what might happen when you're there?
I've imagined this so many times. I think at first I didn't ask myself directly, what's it going to look like? And my assumption had been that, you know, it'd be a matter of he gets hooked up, you know, spends a while on the gurney, falls asleep, the end. And then I came to realize, no, we're talking about a person being put to death against his will. And he might be struggling. He might be fighting. This might not be a pretty death. And I have no idea what to expect. It could be horrible. It could be traumatic. And then I start thinking about that and realize it could be just the opposite experience at the sort of, you know, he walks in, IV gets inserted, and a couple of uneventful minutes later, it's over, the end. Nothing really happened. No different from watching someone take anesthesia in the hospital. And perhaps it'll just be it'll be completely anticlimactic. So I have no idea. I keep turning over this scenario in my head and how it's going to feel to me, and whether I find it traumatic, whether I'm indifferent, whether I find it a positive experience. I hate to use that word.
Have you had second? I mean, was there ever a time when you were about to pick up the phone and say, I'm not going to do it?
I've had second thoughts throughout. Yeah. I have second thoughts right now.
Stephen, can we ask you to come back after you have been down there and after the execution and talk with us again?
Yes, you certainly can.
I appreciate your candor. It is a powerful story, certainly, and one that I think should promote in all of us a lot of deep thought about some very important questions when it comes to life and death. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Stephen Lidge Tyler is scheduled to watch the execution of his father's killer tonight in Texas. He's a professor of economics at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill. There's more to come on The State of Things. Please stay tuned.